Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. My guest today is Sophie Rose. She is a qualified astrologer, French teacher, and author of The Way of the Heart, which is of teachings of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. And she is also a contributing author to The Sacred Shift, which is about co-creating your future. Apparently it's an anthology. So welcome to the program, Sophie.
Thanks for having me, Mike. It's great to be on your show today.
You're very welcome. I'm sure it's going to prove extremely interesting. Now, I noticed that you began your spiritual quest in 1998. I don't know how old you were then. I won't ask you exactly, but what brought that about, and what, in fact, did you do prior to 1998?
I didn't do much spiritually prior to 1998. I was 29 years old at the time, in 98, and I began to meditate then. I went to a dojo, a Zen dojo in Paris. I sat, and I felt that it was something for me, so I just continued over the years to learn meditation. I didn't have any spiritual path. I was just going through classes here and there, some Buddhist and some not affiliated to any spiritual path. And then 3 or 4 years ago, the meditation began to take more and more importance in my life. It became a big hobby. And a place for peace and connection. And I felt that it was really bringing something, you know, some calm in my life. I wasn't so stressed when I was meditating on a regular basis. So, and 3 or 4 years ago, I began to receive guidance as I was sitting in meditation. I was seeing images or I was hearing voices. And so I began to play with it and to ask questions and receive answers. And in February 2010, the vision I received was a vision of Yeshua. It was, can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm hearing something. The vision I received 2 years ago was a vision of Yeshua, or Jesus. He was standing in front of me in a white robe. And so I forgot about this image when I first saw it. I thought that I had fallen asleep during my meditation. But then he kept coming back over and over again. And that's when I began a dialogue with him. I began to ask questions to this image, and it was answering. And I understood that he wanted me to write a book. So I wasn't, you know, Jesus for me was really not my path at the time. I was very doubtful. I didn't want to have anything to do with that. But then after 2 months, I took a pen and paper, and I was just curious of what he had to say. So I took a pen and paper, and he began to dictate. And then that was a book of spiritual poems that I never published. And I got acquainted with people on the internet that were interested in channeling. And then a few months later, they told me, Yeshua and Mary Magdalene told me that they wanted to talk about the Way of the Heart, which is a spiritual course. So I began to channel lessons and sending them to these people through email, and they were coming back with answers. So, I mean, coming back with questions, and I was channeling the answers. So the Way of the Heart is pretty much a book of 36, it's a spiritual course, a book of 36 lessons, and then you have question and answers from the audience.
Right. So when Yeshua appeared to you, I believe you said at one time that he was glowing.
He was, there was a lot of light, and he was standing, the image I had was of him standing in a white robe, right in front of me, with a lot like glowing or with a lot of light behind him. Yes. And then I had this image for a few weeks, and the image disappeared because I think that I was hearing the voice, and I didn't need to have the image to connect it. Right. I'm not seeing this image anymore. I just hear the voice.
Right. Was there any difference in the image he presented to you to the one that Mary Magdalene did?
Mary Magdalene, the first time, I didn't have a lot of images from her. The first time I saw her, she appeared as the image of a woman with like something on her head, like some kind of shawl on her head. And that appeared 2 or 3 months after my first contact with Yeshua. Same thing, I can clearly tell when I sit in meditation, which voice is Yeshua and which one is Mary Magdalene. One is always on my left, one is always on my right, in front of me on the right and on the left. And I do not have the image anymore either.
Right.
Yeah.
Do they appear to you when you want to, or do they just come of their own accord?
My way of channeling, and I think I developed a trust in channeling when I go in meditation and when I really quiet my mind, and after a few minutes, I sense their presence and the voices here, but I hear them, or I hear the voice or ideas coming in my mind during the day. It's just that I do not take down any channelings when I'm not meditating.
Right.
I think it's just a habit I took to be that. That's my comfort space when I know that my mind is quiet and that I can clearly trust what I'm hearing, that it's not me and it's them when I'm in meditation.
Right. Now, since you took all the details and were able to produce the book of the 36 lessons, have they still continued to contact you? In other words, do you still get messages or information?
Yes, I am writing a second book right now, which is a deepening of the first one. They take each lesson of the Way of the Heart and they go into details with each lesson. And I am also taking channelings every once in a while that I post on my website, on my blog, on my Facebook page.
Right.
That have to do with the same type of teachings.
Fine. Mm-hmm. So are the lessons for someone who has already gone so far along the spiritual path of understanding?
I think so. You know, what's interesting is I had a lot of feedback since the book came out. And if you go on Amazon, some people say that these are the teachings of the New Testament. Some other people say that it's very Buddhist. Some other people say that it reminds them of Hindu teachings. So I think these are just universal truth that are coming back with a new twist since we are in a big shift of consciousness right now, and they speak about it in the book. But the way of the heart is pretty much about letting go of the mind of the mind ego as a driver of your life, and going into the heart or soul as a driver. So it's this shift from mind ego to heart and soul, or to oneness. It's taking a higher road, which is a road of oneness, or which is the road of your higher self, and create from there, not from our ego mind. And I think it's coming back right now because we're in a big transition. There is a huge transition at all levels in terms of, you know, environment and economy. And I mean, it's clear to everyone that We are in a big shift right now. And if we create, each one of us is a creator, but if we continue to create from our mind ego, we only create more divisions, more inequalities, more suffering. But if many people go through the inner transformation that is needed to bring forth oneness and their soul's intentions, then we can really make a difference and create something sustainable. So it's really creating from oneness and from heart.
Right.
And it's also about connecting with your soul's intentions, which are the intentions that you put forward before this present incarnation. So I'm sure that for the people who are already on the spiritual path, lots of ideas in the book are already known. As Yeshua and Mary Magdalene mentioned many times, it's about experience. It's not something the way of the heart is not something that has to be learned from the mind. It's really about experiencing oneness and experiencing soul connection. And it's, lessons that we need to reflect on. And as probably many people on the spiritual path know, the path of the initiate is not something that you do and then you're done. It's something that's daily practice. So it's one of the tools, I think, to get into daily practice and to stay on the path.
Right. Now, just as a point here, in case any of our listeners aren't clear on this, what is the relationship between Yeshua and Mary Magdalene?
Well, the book doesn't answer the question. It's not a question that's answered in the way of her heart. But the course is a dialogue. Each lesson is a dialogue between Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. And it really appears as a dialogue between two spiritual teachers. And there is no indication of any unequal relationship or any, master and student. And it really appears as an equal relationship between two spiritual teachers. So to me, it looks like a partnership. I think Mary Magdalene was Yeshua's partner. I don't know if she was. I don't know if she was an intimate partner, but I think they were on the same path there.
Right. I asked that because there appear to be lots of Marys in the Bible, and also at one time going back, there was some confusion as to what Mary Magdalene was. But okay, that's fine. You've explained that. Do you find in the teachings that you get from Yeshua that they're very similar to the ones that he gave in the New Testament?
You know, I do not know so well the New Testament, so I'm not the right person to answer that.
Okay.
I wasn't raised as a religious person, but there are some things in the way of the heart that are talked about that are not, I mean, most people will say that it's not in the Bible. Like they talk a lot about the importance of reincarnation. Now, when I channeled that, I was like, "Gee, Jesus talking about reincarnation. That's an interesting one." And then I did some research on internet, and I discovered that according to certain historian, the reincarnation was taken of the Bible by the Council of Constantinople in the 6th century.
Yeah.
So apparently, lots of things that Constantine was disagreed with, or other emperors were just taken off the Bible for probably power issues and control issues. So there are some things that are definitely not in the First Testament, in the New Testament. And they talk a lot about the importance of teaching reincarnation again, saying that without teaching reincarnation this reincarnation idea, the concept of soul is not correct. It's not complete. The fact that a soul reincarnates over and over again until it reaches ascension, and they say also that it's of big importance in the times we are in, because when you think about reincarnation, there is a lot of responsibility that comes with it. The fact that we will come back in this world, and the fact that the values also we want to give to our children, knowing that our children are the ones that are building the world we'll live in our next lifetime. So these are teachings that are definitely not, you know, in the normal Christian view of things.
Right. Now, you mentioned that we are in a big shift of consciousness and in transition, and you must, like most of us, have heard a lot of talk about the 21st of December this year. Mm-hmm. How do you relate to that?
I don't know how I relate to that. They didn't talk about December 21st. They talk about the urgency to get our stuff together. They talk about the urgency to take responsibility, about the fact that there are no saviors, that we are our own saviors, which is something pretty different from the Christian view too, about the fact that there is a huge need to take a spiritual road, whether it's through one teaching or another. You know, it's one source or oneness and many paths that lead to it. And they talk about the urgency to do something for the earth, that in the next few years, saying that, I don't remember exactly what they say, but there is a feeling of urgency to become responsible and to connect with soul and with oneness. Other than that, they do not talk about this date of December 21st. No.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. In your, with regards to the book that you were a contributing author, The Sacred Shift, it mentions co-creating your future. Mm-hmm. It would seem from what you've said so far that your book also covers that that need. So can you explain how people can co-create their future?
Yes, co-creation is what they say is that creation is the basis of the world, that that we create every single at each instant, that we always create something, that we live in the illusion that the other, you know, that the world is not our creation, when in fact it is, that we're living in an illusion, the illusion being that we are separated, and our mind keeps giving interpretation and names and labels to everything we do. Now, the co-creation they're talking about is being a co-creator with God, or with oneness, or with the primordial energy, or with source. The words don't matter, whatever you consider as God or oneness or creation. And in order to do that, we need to access our soul's intentions, that behind each one of us, each incarnation, we set up soul's intentions. And most people, because they do not have the inner work and discipline needed to access that, function in terms of reaction to life, or they build themselves up, or they act depending on their ego, which means that what we build for ourselves, this like illusory self that we do based on our parents' values, or based on our education, or based on what society wants from us, and all of, so this is like a thought or like an ego build that most of us have. Co-creation is letting go of ego, practicing presence, and really creating from the heart or from our soul's intentions. And our soul's intentions are part of what they call the plan of God, and of creating heaven on earth. When they say, he takes something that in the Bible, in the way of the heart, saying that the kingdom of God is within you. So that's where the co-creation is. It's a shift of consciousness and of awareness, knowing that we are the dream and the dreamer of our world, and that the source of creation should not be the mind of this false sense of self that we have, but should be really our soul and our connection to oneness.
Do you feel that with all the activity going on with people like yourself highlighting the need to find the higher consciousness, that we are actually about to completely create a new future, that we're leaving this old one behind?
I hope so. I feel so. Yeah, there are more and more light workers out there, more and more channelings coming that are very, you know, they talk about the same thing. And I think at one point when the energy of all these people will be strong enough, I think a shift is possible. I hope so. I think it's usually deeply needed right now, and it's the only path, you know, in terms of future, of a sustainable future.
Right now, one of the channelings you took from Mary Magdalene asked the question of what is the divine feminine, and I understand that she went on to talk about two ways to live our life. Mm-hmm. Would you like to talk about that?
Yes, she mentions two ways to live our life. The first one being living our lives from what our mind is telling us, which is making an interpretation. You know, everything comes to existence through our mind. It's from the point, and I think science shows this too, it's from the point we put our thought or our attention onto something that we create it. But we live our lives through something that, like I was saying, in a reaction to our environment, and our mind labels and interprets everything that's around us. And that's one way of living our life. The other way is through the divine feminine, which has to do, according to Mary Magdalene, with listening to our heart and listening to our soul. That's pretty much what she was saying. I don't remember exactly the channeling, but it's on my website.
Right. Can you recall how one would connect with the divine feminine?
Through listening to our heart, through practicing presence, through also going, they say that we are a projection of our soul. That's who we are. Our soul creates us in an incarnation in order to learn and learn some lessons, act on our soul's intention, and so evolve toward ascension. And so our body also has to do with the divine feminine, because our bodies are temples of God, or temples of oneness. That's our soul temple. And so there are several lessons in the way of the heart that have to do with connecting also through our bodies, through presence, through spiritual practices, and making this connection between soul and body.
Right. Yes, because a part that I liked in the bit that I did read on the Divine Feminine was that she said, if you live your life according to your heart, mm-hmm. a new path opens up, you feel connected instead of feeling separated from others, and
right.
you make decisions based on your inner guidance, not on what is expected from you, and you act from a place of love, not separation. And I
right.
thought that was a very good message in itself.
Yes, yes, she's referring to the fact that our minds are separative, attributes. You know, everything we based on our mind is about labeling and separating and making us distinct or different from each other, from the world around us. Whereas our heart is unifying. Is a unifying attribute. So that's like the two ways she was mentioning about how we live our lives.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what is the reality of true love, say, as opposed to physical love? What is the difference?
The love is that they define love as oneness or as God. That's pretty much, they say the ultimate truth is oneness, which is love, which is a very different quality than emotional love or physical love. Oneness or love, as they define it, is like more state of being that lies beyond the mind of the ego, but that's we can feel when we are connected to our soul, or when we transcend, you know, our little self. That's how they defined love, I think. That's a state of no self.
Right. Now, in various teachings, they often refer to the emotion of fear, and I know it's cropped up in your channelings. What would you say that fear does to people?
It prevents them from connecting to oneness. They are saying there are some exercises in the book about how to deal with fear, and they say that fear, in fact, the ultimate fear, or most of the fear we experience, is a fear of being at one. It's a fear of going back to this state of oneness where we were before our incarnation, and it can take many different avenues in our life. It can be like real fear, or it can be disgust, or it can be judgment. It's anything that separates us from our state of oneness. So it's very much ego-based too. I think from the point we have, we still have a sense of self. Of course, there are several different type of fear and different levels of fear. But from the point we still have a sense of self, I think we are in fear, because the ultimate fear is to be at one and to lose this sense of self. So we keep, you know, judging or seeing the other as separate, or being angry, or all this type of emotions and feelings are in fact fear. There is a lot of truth in, you know, the saying to be in fear or to be in love. That's how they how I understand it through the teachings of the way of the heart, whether you're in fear or whether you're in oneness or love.
Right. So I think you're obviously correct when you say that the fear is of being at one with the source. But I suppose what people don't realize is, in fact, how much they gain from being at one with the source, and they really don't lose anything at all.
Right, yeah, there is strictly nothing to lose. It's just an illusion, right? We feel that we're going to lose something by being at one, but there is actually a lot to gain from, I think, being connected to your soul intention, because there is a strong, I think, from the point you connect with your soul intention or with oneness, there is a sense of calling, there is, you know, coming from within, there is something really larger than yourself that doesn't exist to begin with, but also deeply grounded. And I think it's, like you said, I think it's a very liberating feeling. And at the same time, it comes with a lot of personal responsibility. But it's definitely a connection with very creative energies. As probably many people on the spiritual path experienced already, from the point there is this connection that cannot be done with staying in really in separateness all the time. It has to, you know, we have to surrender. We have to surrender the mind, and we have to surrender the ego in order to get there. I think there is really this experience of a path or a trail with a lot of coincidence, which are not in fact coincidence, but you know, when inner guidance begins to come in, then there is clearly a path that appears in your life, almost in daily life. And even if we don't know where the path goes, as long as we keep the faith of this connection, there is a lot of wealth and of wisdom that can be drawn from it.
Right. Do you think that when someone acquires the high state of consciousness, that is the Christ consciousness, that they will have already then reconnected with the source, or is that simply a level that we go through before we get there?
You know, I don't know about that. I don't know how to answer this question. I don't know. The Christ consciousness and the path to me, but it's my own experience, really seem like a lifelong path. It seems that it's always, you're never done with the work. It's always progressing. It's always taking you further into a connection with soul and with oneness. It's never, I think, unless someone arrives at ascension, but it's always a daily practice, you know, to stay within the light and within your connection with this oneness.
Yes. I guess that when you practice that consistently, perhaps in the end you don't even have to think about it. Living
that's
in
true.
The light becomes automatic.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yes.
Now, somewhere you talk about our higher self. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, they don't make a distinction in the book between, I know that some people do, they don't make a distinction between higher self and soul. When they talk about the connection to the higher self, they can talk as well about the connection with soul or oneness. So they don't make this this connection. I don't know what your definition of it is, but
I think that's a pretty good link, actually. To my mind, our higher self is that aspect or essence of ourself that is nearer to the source, or may indeed be a part of the source. So that is all we will have left if we lost our physical body, would be the soul or the higher self. So
right.
I think to me that seems to be a reasonable answer.
Yeah.
Right. Right now, in an article, I think it was, or an extract from your book about love, fear, and surrender, you did talk about going, as we go inside, we uncover our true essence. Did you mean by that that when we meditate, we go inside and we're able to do that?
Yes, I think meditation is a great way to do it, but I think it's something also that we can practice outside of meditation. You know, you can practice presence in daily life, and by practicing presence, you go inside, or at least you're not in your mind so much. I think the surrender has to do with stopping at one point, stopping to look for spiritual enlightenment or for whatever end of a path, but just accept that there is everything right here, right now that you need to know about, and that you just need to surrender to that.
Right.
In order to be present.
Yes, fine. Now, you also mentioned that connection to the source is the highest form of service. Would it be correct to also describe that as doing the will of God in service to others?
Yes, I think so. Yes. Connection to source is the highest form of service, also because there is, by serving you, by connecting with your soul, and by serving your soul, you serve God. And whatever soul intention you put behind your life are connected with God's plan. And I think once you connect with your soul, or your higher self, it's not something where you are by yourself. You know, there is a lot of learning and balancing karma. And I think for most people who are connected on the spiritual realm, action and engagement in the world are a big part of the work. So there is lots of soul work that have to do with relationship, which are something that, you know, we learn a lot through relationships, of course. And I think from the point you're connecting with oneness or with your soul, it's impossible to not feel concerned and to not feel a desire for action.
Right.
And not feel on a road to you know, to doing your own work and the work you're supposed to do in this lifetime.
Right. Now, you mentioned about embracing your soul's intentions, but perhaps some people would say they don't actually know what their intentions are or should be. How would they find out?
They need to read the way of the heart.
Right.
That's actually one of the main goals of the spiritual course, of the way of the heart, is to discover your soul's intentions. And so there are lots of exercises they give to learn how to be present, to let go of ego, to surrender, to let go of the illusion of the self and of the illusion of this world, to become responsible. But yeah, to discover your soul intention, I think, is really about inner work. Like I was saying, let go of mind and ego, and also discipline. It's not something that you can do from one day to another. It's something that you kind of uncover through spiritual discipline, in my experience. But you know, I might be wrong.
Right. In your course, does a person's life plan have any place? Because you've spoken about reincarnation, and presumably, as we evolve spiritually, we are set certain tasks or experiences with each life. How does that fit in with what you're teaching?
The fact that we reincarnate? Or?
Well, yes, and reincarnate with a plan. I mean, clearly, we must have some purpose each time we enter a new life. I'm just wondering if you can take that into consideration when you're trying to develop your spiritual side. I mean, is there room for those experiences still?
Yes, it's, well, the purpose are what they call the soul's intentions. It's the purpose behind your life. That's what they call the soul's intention. And that's spiritual practice enables you to discover the soul's intention or this purpose behind your life.
Okay, now getting back to oneness, how should people view others who, by their actions, their words, or whatever, would be viewed as, say, evil and doing their best to cause dissension and harm in the world?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I think Yeshua, if I remember, Yeshua kind of answers that, not directly, but in one of his channelings, saying that the great thing about teaching reincarnation and sometimes about having past life recalls is that you realize that this person you're judging or this person you're seeing as evil or as, you know, not as, you know, really bad, might have been yourself in a past life.
Right.
That reincarnation teaches us that we might have been many, many, many different people, and sometimes we have been someone that we despise the most in this lifetime. And that goes back to the, you know, non-judgment that we have to have, and of the to the middle path. To that's a very important teaching. You know that we are all one, and that we need to take a middle path. Or when we look at the world around us, knowing that, you know, the other can reflect something that we already had in ourselves before, but we still have in ourselves.
Yeah. I suppose in some ways we should have a lot of compassion and love for those type of people who we view as evil, because one assumes that somewhere along their experiences they've been pulled down by the lower energies, and they need a lot of help to climb out again.
Right. Yes, exactly. And they are probably also very much in their ego mind. They are, you know, some of these people might be, there are all kinds of levels on the way to ascension, and we have all been to all kinds of level. You know, we've been, some of us are more advanced than others, some of us are less advanced than others, and that might be a way to see also these evil people that are people that might just have a very strong ego or mind, a vision of the world, or a mind that labels things completely differently than what our mind labels.
Yes. I have read some spiritual teachings that suggest that when you look at some of these evil people, that they are in fact in some way a reflection of yourself.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And Yeshua gives an answer to, I don't remember what was the question, but in the book, saying that that we could look at everyone we judge, or everyone that brings anger within us, or everyone that you know, makes us uneasy, we can look at them as guides on our own spiritual path. By looking at what they reflect to us.
Yes. That is a rather fearful suggestion, I think. because we never think, do we, normally, that when something happens like that between us and another person, that in some way we may well have attracted it to ourselves.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. And yet, it looks to me like it's the only way really to do a shift, because if we continue, you know, people have always been like looking at each other and judging each other and seeing the right and the wrong, and it's very, very strong in politics right now too, but looking at the evil extra, and it has always been like that for centuries and centuries. And here, I think with the shift and with a lot of channelings coming, they are really talking about oneness. And oneness cannot, it's not something that we can grab with the mind. But if we want to begin to practice it while staying in the illusion of this world, it's really about looking at other people we despise in a different way. That's
right.
Part of the shift, I think.
Yeah. Now, obviously, few people, if any, would disagree with the comment that we're going through a major economic, social, and environmental shift. I guess even in that, there are lessons for the human civilization. Did your teachings or any messages that you have had comment on how this has all come about?
Yes, you know, that's the same teaching. You know how the channelings come back always with the same drumbeat that they keep. That are always the same ideas repeating and repeating themselves in channelings. And here they say that it's about time, and it's pretty urgent now to go toward oneness and to go toward soul and to go toward spiritual values, and to move to make a shift of consciousness, to realize that we are the own creators of our world, and to awake to that, to awake to the fact that our thoughts create our reality, and that we need to really get in touch with our inner guidance and become responsible for ourselves, not wait for governments to provide you know, food and everything we need, but do the work ourselves.
Right.
So now, it's really a big calling for personal responsibility.
Yes, indeed. Sure, that is so. Now, we're coming to the closing minutes of the program, so would you like to take whatever time you need to tell our guests your website address, any other information you'd like to give them, and where your books are obtainable from? And incidentally, is the newer book, The Sacred Shift, was that published last year?
No, The Sacred Shift is going to be published in the next few weeks as an e-book. Yeah, and there are many, there is Barbara Max Herbert in it, there is Steve Brayman, there are lots of people contributing text into that, and I have three texts in it. It should be published really soon, in the next month, I would say. And my book, you can visit my website at www.thewayoftheheartcourse.com, thewayoftheheartcourse.com. I have also a blog where I very much welcome questions, and sometimes I channel the answers. So I'd love to do that. I have a Facebook page that you can access through my website, a Twitter account too, and the book is available on Amazon US, UK, France, Italy, a bunch of them. and it will be available as an e-book very soon, I think by the end of the month.
Right. Now, you said you are in the process of writing a second book. Is there any particular target date for getting that one published?
No, I don't know. I think I'm channeling lesson 17, and there are 36 lessons in the book,
All
so
right.
I don't know yet when this will be channeled. Every once in a while, I channel something else that I post on my website, so it's hard to tell when this will be available.
Right, now, is there anything that we might not have spoken about, whether it relates directly to your book or not, that you would like to mention?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Nothing coming to mind right now.
Okay. I've got a guest next week who I will announce at the end of the programme, who's written a book called Be the Second Coming, and it's a guidebook to the embodiment of the Christ within. So
Interesting.
it follows on very nicely to what we've been talking about with your book. That wasn't deliberately chosen by me for that reason. It's just the way it worked out. But did you ever believe that there would be a physical second coming of Yeshua?
You know what they say in of Yeshua, I don't know, but what they say in the way of the heart is that ascended masters are among us. That's called the externalization of a hierarchy, and that there are people among us who are, like incarnated. It's just one part of a soul, or they come for a certain purpose. But they are from the soul of ascended masters. So I do not know about Yeshua. That's a possibility. I don't know. But that's what they say, that many ascended masters right now are among us, and they do not put a red nose on them. It's up to each of us to see the teachings, or to recognize the wisdom behind some people.
I'm sure that somewhere I did see a channeling from Jesus where, in fact, he explained that the second coming was not one that he would physically take part in, and it was really meant to refer to the Christ's consciousness levels rising within the people, and that would be the second coming, which I thought was
Right.
quite interesting.
Yes.
Sounds possible, doesn't it? Because our consciousness levels are now rising, I think, very quickly.
Right. Yes, very much so. I agree.
It all seems to be building up towards this event that I think has some great significance at the end of this year, 21st of December. But no doubt we will learn a lot more as the year goes on. And even you may get some channeling from Yeshua, which will give you some explanation for what is to happen.
Yes, that would be great.
Anyway, we've reached the last minute or so. So thank you very much, Sophie, for coming on to the program. It's very interesting to talk about your book. And I hope your course continues to be a great success.
Thank you so much, Mike, for having me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank
Thank you.
you. Right,
Bye-bye.
friends. Thank you. Yet another interesting guest. And next week, as I've already mentioned, I've got Hope Ives Moran coming along. She's written a book called Be the Second Coming, and she talks of it as a guidebook to the embodiment of the Christ within, a personal journey, which is our collective destiny. So thank you for being with me today. Hope you can make it next Friday. God bless you all. Thank you.